lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Liam Delcombe.
And I'm Brendan Nell.
Brendan, a mixed bag for South African teams in the URC last weekend. The two coastal teams going down on tour. The two Highveld teams recording victories. In both cases, good wins. It could have been more convincing in the case of the Lions. The Bulls losing a bit of momentum, but showing, you know, good guts in that second half and game management to get the job done. But the Storms and the Sharks, quite a bit off the pace.
Yeah, it's hard to put your finger on what exactly went wrong. And I think, firstly, we must say that there were, in all four of those games, a couple of decisions that certainly were hometown decisions and made huge, and the crowds influenced it.
Are you allowed to say that?
I am allowed to say it, and I think the refereeing needs to be of a higher standard in the URC because the competition certainly is. So I think the refing needs to take a step up, and I think even the refs themselves would probably admit that. That's not hitting the refs and all that. I think we can acknowledge when there was a weekend, the standard is normally high, and it wasn't so high this weekend, and I think it should take a step up. But saying that, that's no excuse for the Sharks or the Stormers. They both seemed to lose momentum. They both looked extremely brittle on defense. And you sort of wondered whether they were really had enough interest in the game. Maybe that's being a bit harsh, but just the Sharks seems like the same old problems that last season came back again.
Yeah, I think I wrote that they were a little ponderous and predictable in attack. I mean, they did create a bit. They got into the red zone often, didn't apply the finishing touches. So they were blunt in that respect. And then also on defense, I think you have a point where, you know, in the second half, they let a few in too easily. And the same with the Stormers, where I thought the Stormers at times looked very good in attack. They had one or two opportunities ruled out. So maybe a little unlucky there. But again, I mean, they were a team that set the standard not too long ago on defense. And to see them ship tries in the way they did was a bit concerning.
I think to me is if you look at it, the Edinburgh was always going to give a response, after what happened in Joburg. So that's part of it. But neither of those teams, neither the Sharks or the Stormers on the way they played should have lost by 30 odd points. And I think that's the concern. That scoreline that sort of ballooned near the end for both teams is a concern. We knew Benetton were going to come right as well at some point as well, and they showed it. Right. Rainer Smith had a fantastic game. I think on the other games, the Dragons frustrate me as a team because they're the type of team that you feel teams should put away. And a team like Leicester probably would put them away quite easily. But the Lions seem to struggle against them, especially at the breakdown. The breakdown was only to one side, but the Lions struggled to adapt when they couldn't just get those passes away like they did the week before. The Bulls, of course, their problems were with the cards, and that sort of stunted all their momentum. Yeah. And there's a lot we can say about those cards, but I feel a bit sorry for Jay because he also said that at one point that how does he handle those cards? I asked him the question afterwards, and he was quite clear. He said, how do I handle it? He didn't think David Creels was a red card. He thought Elric Lowes was unlucky because he thought it was a genuine intercept attempt. And poor old Alalutu Chikwene, who was just standing there, and another player tackled the player into him, and there was a clash of heads. You really feel sorry for a guy like that. But we talk a bit more about head injuries and that later with our guest. But I think just on the whole of it, let's just complete the Bulls, though. Then there was that bizarre sequence, and it wasn't just in the Bulls game, but the Bulls game was the biggest highlight. We had a sense at the end of the game when the Bulls went down.
Well, low light.
Yeah, and where the officials couldn't figure out who needed to be on the field and who wasn't on the field. And maybe let's just listen to how Jake handled it. This clip, he was just as confused as all of us.
Yeah, so what happened was Gerard failed his HIA and then Aluta got a yellow card. So basically what it meant is the next time there was a scrum, and we were probably fortunate that scrum only came in the 77th minute. That scrum could have come 5-6 minutes before that. And then it meant that you can't play with 14 men because you've got a red card, so you have to play with 12 men. So therefore, Grobbies, who's a front rower, had to come back into the front row because you're not allowed to then put loose forwards in the front row, stop teams from doing it deliberately. And it was such, I mean, I've never been involved in a game. I've been coaching for 42 years. I've never been involved in a game where put him on, take him off, no, leave him on, no, swap him, no. I've never, ever experienced that in my life. And then the captain comes off. And I don't know who took the captain off. I mean, I don't even the ref knows how the captain got off, but he came off. So it was, I can tell you, it's the first time I've ever experienced that. And I don't think anybody knew for that 3 minutes how many scrummed and who needed to go and who needed to change. And I'm just fortunate that we got through that on the other side.
Yeah, I watched some of that unfold and I thought, geez, these people, when I say these people, I'm talking about World Rugby, often talk about how they need the need to speed the game up and to make it more fan friendly and aesthetically pleasing. And then you have a sequence of events like that where there's no play for, I don't know how long that was. It felt forever.
Yeah, no, that wasn't the only game it was in. There was an incident in the Leinster Munster game, which amazing to see 82,000 people, 80,000 people break the record for the URC's best attendance. And well done to all involved there. But there was an incident there where one of the Munster players was off just after a kick, and the ref said play on, and Leinster went and scored. And now URC's come out afterwards and said that shouldn't have happened. And unfortunately, these sort of lowlights get highlighted much more than they should. There's a lot of other things that happen on the field, but when you've got something like that, it does the game no service. And my biggest thing is just World Rugby, unfortunately, is making the game more and more complicated. The refs struggle, the players struggle, fans struggle, and they keep on saying these are fan-based changes. And I've had my rant about that before, and I still want to know who those fans are. But yeah, unfortunately, you remember those parts of the game more than you remember actual tries and things that happened.
Yeah, when you call it fan-based changes, it sounds like they walked into a pub and put on a file with a couple of pens and buy those fans a couple of beers, and then they walk out and then they come back in an hour and say, what did you come up with, boys?
No bad ideas in the brainstorm. No bad ideas. Yeah, one of those things. No, but it's just, it's ridiculous. But I suppose we're moving on. We're getting closer and closer to the Springboks end of the year tour. And I must say, I just on that, I want to give a bit of a shout out because I found myself yesterday on social media laughing at your brother-in-law's newest advert. For those who don't know, Donovan Goliath, the comedian. Now, if you haven't seen it, go see his advert for Springbok withdrawal symptoms. I quite enjoyed that, you can tell him. Yeah, it just had me laughing because I think we all got a bit of Springbok withdrawal symptoms at the moment, and that tour is coming along fast.
Yeah, no, it was very funny. In fact, when it started out, I thought, like, is he trying to impersonate Jaden? And then this thing unfolds, and it is well worth a look. He had a number of very interesting responses on social media. In fact, somebody said to him that that he kind of looked like the Timu version of Erges
I'm sure that's something that's going to stick around for a couple of family briars and
Neymar.
no. Well, let's get on to this week's games. Start off with Friday's games, two games on Friday night. First one, Ulster hosting Ospreys. Ulster 8th, Ospreys 13th, both sides in need of a victory.
Easy one for me. Ulster at home. Ulster will win that by 12 points.
Yeah, I think maybe even more because my watching the Ospreys, despite all the cards that they got, the Bulls got, etc. Yeah, you've got the feeling if that didn't happen and the Bulls were playing in Pretoria, this would have been a 60-point game. Ospreys haven't shown much, and I know they're going to talk about the fight, but you need more than fight when you in a season like this. Ulster
Well,
by,
I'm
I
just
think.
thinking that the conditions might be typically Belfast, so
Yeah. Well, I'll go for 20. Let
tight.
me go for bigger. Then I can always be wrong. So then, of course, talking about these Bulls, they going up against Scarlets, a team they beat handily at Loftus last year by 50 odd points. Scarlets surprised Cardiff and went against our expectations last weekend with a win there. Maybe something's brewing at the Scarlets.
Maybe there is, but is it brewing sufficiently, or has it brewed? Yeah, has it brewed enough to halt the charge of the Bulls? Because it will have to take a lot. For me, still the Bulls, and by double digits.
I think sometimes, just the touring factor takes those double digits down to single digits. And I suppose you wonder just how much of a response and how much anger there is in David Krill's red card for the Bulls. I know they weren't particularly happy. So if you get that sort of response and they've got a couple of injuries, they don't have Gerhard Steenkamp and they don't have Alrik Lowe this week, both failed HIAs, but they've got enough depth to replace them and still be strong. So that's going to be interesting just to see how that pans out. But I'd say Bulls probably by about 8. Roll on to Saturday. The Lions go across to Zebre Palmer with their ice cream yellow T-shirts and rather very cute stadium at the Stadio Sergio Lanfranchi. What do you think there?
I think the Lions will go there with a lot more ambition. When I say ambition, I'm talking about scoring more tries. I think they left a few out there last weekend. And of course, it's one of those weird ones where they played that game, but they've also got an eye on their following game against Leinster. So they'll probably look at the Zebre game thinking if they have the opportunity to fill their boots, they should. So I'm going to give it to the Lions, despite all their intent not to get away necessarily, but to win by 14.
Well, that's the thing. I think there is quite a bit of rain forecast, so the conditions might have a factor, but the line should be still too strong for that for them as well. And I think this is their chance to grab points because next week at the Aviva against Leinster is going to be very tough for them. I think the Lions by 10. Then Saturday's probably the biggest game on Saturday, the defending champions Glasgow Warriors head down at 3:45 to Hollywoodbets Kings Park to face the Sharks. And the Sharks, for the first time this season, have all their players back, including one Siya Kolisi and Evan Etzebeth, who've been releasing quite a few interesting social media videos on how keen they are to play. So do the Sharks turn their season around against a very, very good Glasgow Warriors team?
A fascinating match in prospect there, just to see how the Springbok component reincorporates into that side. Usually, it takes a little while for teams to gel, but we've seen in the past that it can happen fairly quickly as well. So, look, they had better do that because I mean they're up against a very, very good Glasgow Warriors side. To arrive at a prediction is difficult. I think it'll be tight. I'm going to go Warriors by 4.
I'm gonna back the Sharks because they need to win. One, they need to win just for they're in 14th spot at the moment after 4 rounds. But I think just more than that, Glasgow comes down here, claims a win away from home in South Africa. That just strengthens their ambitions to finish top as well. We need to beat these overseas teams in South Africa. They are an extremely good team. But I think the box will probably inspire, and I see a big game for Eben Etzebeth there as well. I'd say Sharks by probably 5, but it's going to be close. Great game to watch. Then straight after that, another one of these that we talk about South African teams against overseas teams, Munster, who are in a bit of a topsy-turvy season so far. They haven't really settled in, but that's nothing new for Munster, travelling down to Cape Town Stadium to face the DHL Stormers at 6 o'clock. And another one, the Stormers need to win. They in last spot on the log, which is very strange for the Stormers, but Munster have also been mauled by Leinster last week. I see probably the Stormers coming good, but I think it's going to be a very, very high pressure, very big arm wrestle, and the Stormers probably coming through with a penalty or two at the end.
Yeah, I'm seeing a slugfest here. I think they'll take lumps out of each other. Again, I think it'll be a close one. And I'm going to give it to the Stormers, but not by much. It might be decided by a Mani Lebok kick if he gets picked.
Well, I think it could come down to a penalty either way. So yeah, and this week's threw up a lot of very interesting games. The next one being Edinburgh hosting Cardiff. Edinburgh coming off that win this last weekend and sort of rectifying it, but Cardiff are sixth at the moment, which is quite high for them, and they're playing at the Hive Stadium. I'm not quite sure Cardiff have enough there, but it should be a close enough game that it'll be competitive. But I think Edinburgh probably sneak through at home by about 5 or 7 points.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna have to give it to Edinburgh. I'm gonna give it to them by a bit more. I think they hit their stride nicely last week. Showed great resolve to turn that result from Ellis Park around. Yeah, I think that result from last week could have put them in a good space.
Yeah. Then Saturday evening games. Also a fascinating one. Connacht in fifth spot in the log at the moment, hosting Leinster, who are obviously top unbeaten at the moment. Fascinating Irish derby this one, because Connacht are probably punching a bit above their weight and playing at home. They'll see themselves give themselves a chance to go Leinster, but Leinster so far in this competition have just looked awesome. And if they're going to pick, it depends on what team they pick, of course. But if that's going to be what we're going to expect, I think Connacht might have a tough time. I'd say it's going to be also a bit of a slugfest, but I see Leinster coming on up by about seven at the end.
Yeah, Connacht had a real opportunity last week to record an away win in a derby game, and came up short. And against a Leinster side that have, I mean, they've pretty much hit their stride now. So, but it's going to be very difficult just to stop them, to stop that momentum. So, for me, Leinster by five or six.
Interesting. And then I think a game that's probably, because it's on the same time as Connacht Leinster, not many people are probably going to watch it outside Italy and Wales. Dragons hosting Benetton at Rodney Parade, 8:35 Saturday night. Dragons 11th, Benetton 12th. Benetton are a lot better than that. I think now that they've hit their stride, against the Stormers, they probably are looking at powering on. So I reckon, probably Benetton by 7 or 8 points. Dragons, to me, are probably going to finish bottom part in the bottom three of the table again. Don't see them doing much better than that.
Yeah, look, Dragons, I think typically will huff puff lots of hot air, but I think ultimately Benetton by nine.
Yeah, it's another full round. Of course, there's a lot going on as well, Liam. I think we should mention it. There's a big vote that probably by the time this podcast comes out is going to be happening. SA Rugby talking about the equity deal. A lot of opposition to that. It's a bit too complex to in a short time like this get into. But what we're going to try and do is once a decision has been made, we're going to try and get some of the role players onto the show to talk about exactly either what went right or what went wrong and what the future holds. But certainly some big questions being asked in SA Rugby and some major decisions that need to be made.
Yeah, it's not a topic we're trying to ignore, but I think a lot of role players, I mean, people have signed non-disclosure agreements, so they can't really emerge from the long grass just yet. But in a week's time, they might well. So, and hopefully we can tee one or two people up.
Well, that's it for us this week. We'll go straight into our big interview now. With the one, the only professor, Dr. Ross Tucker, who's on World Rugby's medical board. He's the guy who does all the research into head injuries, into substitutions, and all those sort of things. And what triggered this discussion was Sir Bill Beaumont's comments that the substitute should be reduced, something we've heard a lot before on around every time the bomb squad does anything. There's all this emotional outcry by especially people in the Northern Hemisphere. We thought we'd bring some scientific perspective to it. So have a listen to what Ross says. It's very enlightening. Our guest today is somebody well known in the rugby circles, in sports circles in general, and part of World Rugby's medical panel. Is it Professor Ross Tucker, or do I call you Doctor? I'm never sure what title you have, Ross. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. I'm not precious about that. So you can just drop it all together and just go with Ross. It's fine.
Maybe just give us your what you do for World Rugby, so the people who don't know you, the few of them that there are, could probably just know what your expertise is and why we're going to talk to you.
Yeah, sure. I'm employed by World Rugby as a research scientist, and my main mandate, I suppose, is to support decisions around player welfare with research. And the main one, as I'm sure most listeners are aware of, is concussion. So I started with World Rugby in 2015, and we did all the studies that looked at the mechanism of concussion, how they happen, how they might be prevented. We're now driving the use of these instrumented mouth guards for the same purpose. And so pretty much any decisions around player welfare, how concussions are diagnosed, managed, and not just concussion, but I will say it's probably 90% of the challenge at the moment. And so, yeah, any conversation comes up around player welfare related issues like the one we'll discuss today, they end up coming via me to see if there's any evidence to support them and whether or not a change should be made.
Yeah,
Ross, the game has moved on so much. I mean, when you find yourself watching old matches, whether it's from the 80s or the 90s, I mean, do you find yourself cringing?
Yeah, and that's why it's frustrating when you hear all these people who like talk about nostalgia, about how the game has to change, and because it's in such, I think it's in such a good place, you know. And obviously, I look at it with a player welfare hat on, and I think the game is safer now than it ever has been, despite the fact that the players are faster and bigger and more powerful. Like the athlete who's playing the sport now is completely different to the athlete from 20, 30 years ago, never mind 40, 50. But I think that we've gotten a handle on all the injuries. I mean, not you can never get a handle on it and say now we're satisfied. So we'll continue to work. But I think from that perspective, it's in a good place. But I also think aesthetically, it's in a good place. The athleticism of the players, it's spectacular watching it now. And I sometimes for that reason, it's a bit frustrating when people say we need fewer scrums. I don't think people realize how much time was lost to scrums back in those days. And how messy they were, and how chaotic lineouts and set pieces were, and how good it is to watch today's modern game.
Just on the reason why we asked Ross to come on to the show, of course, is there were some comments and rather emotional comments by Sir Bill Beament, chairman of World Rugby, this week, saying that he feels the substitutes law needs to change. And then he went on a bit of a nostalgic, as you say, a bit of a nostalgic rant about how in his day they played longer, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, the first caveat that just pops into my head is that in those days, the ball in play was probably about 20 odd minutes, where it's almost double that nowadays. And yeah, it's infuriating because I think for the average fan out there, every time it seems, and maybe this is unfair on World Rugby, but it seems that every time that there's a Springbok success or the Bomb Squad does something well or tactics work, that suddenly there's all these arguments in the media coming from various media personalities saying that, substitutes should be limited. It's not happened in 2019, 2023. Yeah, and maybe Ross, just give us your take on that because, having less substitutes is not going to improve the game necessarily.
You know, I think generally one of the great things about rugby becomes one of its frustrating things is that it's such a complex game that there are so many levers that you can pull and so many buttons you can push, strings to try and change it. And so it does sometimes feel, and this is, I'll get to your specific one in a moment, does sometimes feel that there's too much tinkering in the game and that people are changing it too often. Like I think I read a piece yesterday where the players kind of just seem almost, fatigued by the change, but they just accept the change. Some law change is going to happen this year and it'll happen next year and the year after that. And then it does sometimes feel that it's done in response in a reactive way, which I think a lot of the time is true. On the subs bit, I will say in defense, when I started, it was 2015, and by 2016, that conversation had already begun. I remember there was because I go along to the board meetings because there's always a player welfare slot in the board and executive council meetings. There was an item on the agenda, and I think it was late in 2016, in which it was first proposed that the substitute number should be looked at as a player welfare initiative because the theory was, and it spawned from a comment that Warren Gatland had made, where he said that standing on the side of the field and watching these massive, powerful forwards colliding with one another was like watching car crashes. That's what it felt like to him, which wasn't a great headline for the sport, obviously. But that was the first time that it ever reared its head. And then it sort of faded away and then it comes back. But then, of course, when we win the World Cup and we call our own bench the Bomb Squad, that's also not a great headline from, again, I'm player welfare biased now, because what's the function of a bomb, right? But yeah, then it's gained momentum as a consequence. But our point is, it's not entirely due to the Springbok bench and our success. It has been a conversation that's done the rounds a little bit before that. But our success has certainly been petrol on a small flame.
I get the sense that if somebody like Daniel Harkuda made that comment, it might have passed. Nobody might have taken notice of it. But because it was the Lions coach, the British and Irish Lions coach of the day, that it had some currency, or for some people at least.
Exactly. And yeah, it would have been just after that Lions tour, right? The 2015 one. And then Eddie Jones, I remember there was a podcast, Eddie Jones spoke, and he said that his biggest concern was that the game was becoming too power-based, more like the NFL, where players were being conditioned to be just for a few second explosive efforts, and you could do that because of the subs law. So there were little things that happened before 2019 that gave rise to the discussion around the substitutes. But then, yeah, as you mentioned there, Brendan, the box success and the bomb squad amplified the volume of those conversations.
Now, Ross, your research, and I mean, I remember watching a video that you did where you actually brought up some graphs, and you said, the difference between player fatigue and bringing when the fresh player comes on the field, it doesn't necessarily heighten the injury risk for players as such. Maybe just chat to us a bit about that.
Yeah, so it is a really fascinating question, for which I'll be upfront, clear up front, there's no definitive answer. So I look at this and I say, well, what's the evidence for these discussions? Should we lower the number of subs? And again, remember that it was initially proposed to be a player welfare decision, because the theory was that when you bring on a fresh player in the 63rd minutes, he's only got to be ready to go for 17 minutes. And we're talking about 112 kilograms of explosive power coming onto the field who's fresh. And the guy he's going to go up against in a scrum or a tackle or a carry is a guy who's played for 63 minutes and is fatigued. And there was concern that that imbalance between fatigue and freshness was causing lots of injuries to players. So that was the model, was that if we reduced the number of subs, we wouldn't have these imbalances anymore, and it would protect players. And also over time, people were saying that what it would do is it would force you to condition a player to be prepared for 80 minutes and not 20 minutes. And that would be a smaller player who's not quite as explosive. It's kind of like, think about what Usain Bolt looks like compared to a marathon runner, you know, different athlete. On the other hand, and my first thought when this proposal came across is, hang on a moment. We know from lots of research that fatigue is a major risk factor for injury. A player who's fatigued is more likely to be injured. So if you don't allow substitutions, you're loading more fatigue onto a player and you're going to start causing more injuries. And so the question that I was then trying to answer is whether fatigue, or this imbalance between freshness and fatigue, was a greater risk factor for injury. So what we basically did, does that make sense so far before I
Yeah,
go on?
yeah,
Because
yeah,
I
yeah.
may labor this.
Yeah. In fact, had there been any research done before that suggests, was there a correlation between a fresh player coming on and then numbers spiking of players who had been playing for, say, an hour getting injured? I mean, was there any data that suggested that in the first place?
No, there were, and that was the missing piece, right? And we realized that straight away. And that was research that was done specifically to try and help support the decision around this issue. What had been done at that point was that people had looked at when injuries happen in matches. And there are more injuries in the second half than the first. So not by a lot, but like 20% more. And some studies had found, for instance, that even injuries like concussion were more likely to happen in the second half of each half. So in the last 20 minutes of the first half and the last 20 minutes of the second half, which again suggests that there's a fatigue component to injury. So that was pretty well known, and not just in rugby union, by the way, also rugby league, AFL, that all found that. So that was the starting point for the fatigue model. But as you point out, the real question is, does the addition of a fresh player to the mix increase the risk significantly overall and to the fatigue player? So now, if you think of a tackle as a dance between two, sometimes more than two, sometimes two tacklers, so three players, you've got the ball carrier and you've got the tackler. And what you really want to know is A, who got injured, and B, who caused the injury, and then C, which of those two players was fresh and which of those two players was fatigued. So it becomes quite a detailed analysis. And what we did was we went and looked at the injury studies that were available where there was information, and we said, right, let's ask how many minutes the tackler and the ball carrier had played at the time that an injury happened. Let's ask who was injured in that situation to try and understand who gets the injury and what the overall risk is. And so that was the study that was done specifically to answer this question. And the finding, I mean, you alluded to it there, Brendan, is that when you look at the tackle dance, and I'll call it that, when if you say, for the sake of argument, that we're going to set the risk of injury when both players involved in a tackle are starters. Let's set that at one. Okay, we just call it arbitrarily one. When both players are replacements, the risk of injury is lower. Does that, if you let that sink in, does that make sense?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, it
Yeah. It wasn't confusion, it was just mute.
Yeah.
So when both players are fresh, the overall risk of injury goes down. So for the sake of injury, you want fresher players, not fatigued players. When one player is one, well, not let's not say fresh and fatigued. When one player is a starter and one player is a replacement, then what's interesting is that the overall risk in the dance is slightly lower. And here's where it gets tricky. But the risk to the starter is considerably higher, and the risk to the fresh player is considerably lower. So overall, in that tackle event, the dance, the risk drops slightly, but it's spread differently across the two people involved in it. The fresher player carries much less risk, and the fatigued player carries much more risk. So depending on your starting position, you could use that and argue it both ways. You could say, oh, look, the freshness versus fatigue argument is true, because it is a fact that the fresher the player, the less likely they are to be injured, and the more fatigued the player, the more likely they are to be injured. But from the perspective overall, you're interested in the total risk, and that's lower when you have a replacement on involved in the situation compared to when you have a starter.
So, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Is there not a argument maybe for more subs that you almost make it 15 subs? I mean, that would be a counter argument. I'm sure some people will probably make. So.
Come on, Brendan.
I made it at a meeting once. I said, based on these data, that if your only concern was injury risk, but no, okay, I don't. That look, that does change the game now, because then you literally do start producing players for 40 minutes at a time, and I think that would have knock-on effects. So that was a tongue-in-cheek suggestion, but yeah, if you took that finding at sort of face value, that's one thing you might suggest. Again, the whole game's not all about injury reduction. I mean, it's my bias, but it's not all that counts. So I wouldn't really do that. But you could make that proposal.
On the path of nostalgia, there you're going to need an awful lot of doctor's notes before you
And actually, you bring that up, but that's one of the other logistical challenges to cutting the sub number, right? I mean, aside from the evidence, if you go into a game with only four options for a sub, and you're now in the 65th minute, and you've made those four, and then a player gets a slight injury, you can't make another one. So then you say, okay, well, that player's got to play on. And now all of a sudden, what might otherwise have been a mild injury becomes a very severe one. Let's say it's a little hamstring niggle, maybe that's 1 week off. Now, but now you play that player for the next 20 minutes, fight through the injury, now he's missing a month. So what it would cause is, okay, you say, well, then let's have injury subs. Unlimited, as it were, injury subs up to seven. But now players will fake injuries, and you don't want to see that, because now you have an integrity problem to the game. If it's a front row issue, you've got to maintain the integrity of the front row. So there's actually a lot of complexities that come into it when you reduce the number of subs, which, quite aside from the evidence, were also tricky to discuss. And there were working groups put together to look at this and discuss it, and it's actually really complicated, fascinating area.
You're obviously closer to them than we are. I mean, we read their press releases and we often wonder what goes on there in those boardroom meetings. But I was just wondering, do you think that there is chance of a significant change in future? I mean, they keep on surprising us with law changes, but do you think it's got any momentum there in those meetings?
There's always a chance, right? Like, because some, as you see from the comments and the fact that it's been hovering around since 2016, means that there's enough people who are thinking about it. So I'm sure that we'll revisit it at some point in the future. But I don't see it in on this side of the horizon. Maybe it's over it again, and we'll go back to it. Maybe more evidence comes out that shows that there's no risk. These instrumented mouth guards are giving us unbelievable volumes of data. Because one of the challenges is that when you do a study like we did there, you look at 1,000 tackles and you look at 200 injuries or whatever it is. But with these mouth guards, we'll have 1 million tackles, and 200,000 of them will be significant head acceleration. So Maybe as we move forward, we'll get more data that allows us to go back to it. So over the horizon, who knows? But not, I don't think for now.
I think just to maybe touch on, I mean, I know we could probably do a whole podcast on just on the head injuries, and it's difficult in such a
Or the
short.
mouth guards.
Oh yeah, all the mouth guards, yeah. Well, that they sort of go into each other, but just on the head injuries, I mean, we've obviously seen again very emotional arguments going on both sides on head injuries and fans not liking red cards, and now this 20-minute red card rule. What's your take on the red card rule? Do you think it lessens the integrity of foul play, or should I say it makes cheapens it a bit?
Yeah, I'd lean slightly in that direction. As listeners and you guys would know, we brought that red card rule in the first place. The not the rule, the red card sanction was always intended to try and change the player's behavior and get them to tackle lower. Because the evidence that we had was that when the tackler's in a slightly lower position, the risk of head injuries to both players goes down. You know, you're protecting them, the ball carrier from the tackler, and you're actually protecting the tackler from himself or herself. And so we were pretty committed to that all the way back to 2017. I remember we sat with coaches and they said that sanction is like taking bad medicine when you're sick. You know, you might want to spit it out, but you just have to swallow it and keep taking it and maybe you get better. And so it has been over the last 7 years, like a little bit frustrating because it's sort of been coming in waves and we've tried various things to get consistency. And I completely understand the frustration of the fans around some of the inconsistencies and so on. I feel the same way about it. But it's a compl as I say, it's a complex game. So I also understand from the perspective of the officials. So at this point now in 2024, to now say that that sanction is going to be diminished because that's really what it is. Yeah, I mean your first reaction is, oh, we're almost conceding. But the other side of it is that, and this is a reality, is if it's the 7th minute of a big game, and insert big match here, whether it's a Six Nations or heaven forbid a World Cup final, and there's a tackle that's not deliberate. It's not intentionally aggressive and malicious and violent, but it causes head contact. That referee doesn't want to give that card. I think that makes, you know, the ref is a human. He doesn't want to spoil the game and insert himself into the headlines. And similarly, the fans don't want to see it. So a lesser sanction might be more likely to be given. So the optimist in me is looking at it and saying that actually, where at the moment the threshold for giving a red card, let's call it, is here, and I'm sort of showing a line. Now with a 20-minute red card, that threshold drops. We'll see more of them. And so I think we can spin that in a positive way because now that red card sanction is a message. It's an educational message. Tackle lower, get the height, pay attention to your tackle technique because that's causing the head contact in the first place. So my hope is that, yeah, we'll see a lesser sanction, but I hope we see it more often. It's kind of like the analogy is, you can use a really big stick infrequently, or you can use a small stick quite a lot. And I'm hoping that that's what it causes.
Last one for me, Ross. And rugby, of course, is an incredibly dynamic sport, and there is obviously the need to get decisions right. And you've got foul play, obviously, in one instance that is something that officials have to get spot on. But then there's also World Rugby's one of their drives, one of the objectives, is to speed the game up, make it a spectacle. And often you find that those two things kind of clash because you get these instances where the game comes grinds to a halt for 5, 6 minutes, maybe even longer at times. Do you think that's a balance that should be struck better? Because at the moment it just feels like there are games where it just drags on, and these two things that they have to get right are conflicting.
Yeah, it's for sure. Comes up all the time. Now, I don't think a weekend goes by where there's not a game where you say that that game had too much TMO time, too many, I don't want to call them interferences, because as you point out, they're important things to pick up. But I do wonder whether we can learn from some other sports. I watch, I didn't say a lot, but I watch a little bit of NFL, for instance, and you don't, they use a TMO, just like we do, video review, they call it, and it's all controlled from their headquarters in New York. And I think it's pretty slick. So they don't really miss much. And they seem to get most of those decisions right without interrupting the flow. The thing about NFL is there's not much flow in the first place because it stops
Yeah.
so often. So that does lend itself to that. But I think we can learn a little bit around that. I think the having to rock and roll and back and forward on a foul play decision isn't great because it stops everything. The other thing it does, of course, is it just replays over and over and over the negative elements of the game. So from a marketing perspective, you'd actually want to say, like, actually, you can deal with that stuff offline. Like, and that was the one of the driving factors, incidentally, behind this video review when the referee does the old X over their head, sends the player off, and it can be assessed by in the bunker, I think we called it. So I think that there are things that need to be done, yes. I don't think the ball in play is as big a problem as some people make it out to be. You know, Brendan said earlier, like, if you watch games, 20 minutes was the norm before professionalism came in. Now you're regularly getting games in the low 40s. So I don't think it really needs to be sped up much more than it is, but I can see why a 3-4 minute stoppage every 15 minutes is frustrating for fans, and we can definitely do better there.
And ball in play is also a little overrated. I mean, you could have teams going from one side of the field to the next. I mean, think of although I kind of liked it back then, the Brumbies of 1997, for instance. There's lots of continuity, but the ball didn't necessarily go forward all the time.
And I mean, remember there was came up in the last World Cup. It wasn't Foster, it was didn't Ian Foster say at one point, would you rather watch a game like theirs against Italy, where the ball in play was in the 40s, or like ours against England? And I mean, the answer is obvious. You definitely watch ours against England. And that's not just because we won the game, but just because, like, the game, I don't know. I think the valuable elements of rugby are the variation in it. You know, we spoke, I've got a podcast of my own, and I spoke to John Dobson and spoke to him about the maul and set pieces. And he made the point is, like, if you want your magicians to have space, your Colbys and your Kirtley Owenses to have space, you have to have 2,000 kilograms of players in one place. You want 8 sets of 8 forwards from each side to be in one place in a maul in order for the space to exist. And if you only ever think about space, you never create space. So you have to. Anyway, so little things like that, the value of the sports in the variation and the different ways to play and the different ways to win and express skill. And I hope that the sport doesn't lose that in pursuit of the speed issue.
I think, Ross, you've probably touched on what I was going to say as my last little comment. I was not really going to make a question, but if you want to respond, it's fine. I think one of my concerns about the game, when we keep on tinkering and tinkering with the game, we already hear referees have to make over 200 decisions in any single game. We now, you know, they're now going to assess, and that's why the bunker's been good, because but most times they have to assess without the bunker, head injury, collisions, and things that happen. And there's obviously the thing that people never take into account is that law of unintended consequences that always seems to happen. You make a law and then nobody thinks about what happens after that. There's always teams that will, you know, bend that rule, the law, et cetera. And there's things that happen that then nobody ever thought about. So I just worry about going forward that we keep on tinkering and tinkering and poor refs, you know, get the brunt of it the whole time because they make a decision like this. I think simplifying the game would probably be better in all respects and in terms of head injuries and all these other things. And unfortunately, emotion that's rules the day in our game a lot. So I don't know. I hope there's some progress going forward on that, but I don't know. I'm hoping you're seeing it more than I'm seeing it.
Yeah, I'm still optimistic. I wasn't kidding at the beginning when I said I think the game's in a really good place, actually. I think it's always easy to find one or two things or 20 things to complain about, but I think they're outnumbered by the good elements of the game. I'm glad I'm not on a committee that has to, like, evaluate and establish laws for the sake of the game, only for player welfare. So I can always fall back on a player welfare argument and so on and say, you know, the other concern I have sometimes is, for every minute of ball in play time, there are going to be 6 extra tackles. And 6 extra tackles means, on average, about 15 extra heads are in danger because there's a tackle in the following ruck and so on. So I worry a little bit about what we're doing to the risk by driving the ball in play time up. And also the speed. You know, speed is a major risk for injuries also. So there's that side. But aside from that, I'd love to say, oh, the tinkering is done and so on, but you know it's not. Again, because it's such a complex game, that you'll change a law here, and then 6 months down the line, you'll realize that the coaches and the players have responded to it. Now you've got a new problem to solve. So it's like playing that game, whack-a-mole, or hit the crocodile at the fairground a little bit sometimes. But that's part of what makes, as I said, I think that's part of what makes the sport great. And I almost feel sometimes like we as rugby people who are inside it, we should actually embrace the complexity of it. Because I hear your points about simplifying it, but I think sometimes the most fascinating thing is the complexity. And if we could, so maybe what we, I think what we have to try maybe do is simplify the complexity so that it looks more inviting to people who don't know it really well. But those of us inside, I mean, we can get lost in the complexity in what I think is a wonderful way, no?
No, I get you, and I think we probably agree a lot more on that than we probably sounds like this at the moment. Ross, what's your podcast name if anybody wants to go have a look at it and hear a bit more about these issues?
Yeah, thanks. It's called The Real Science of Sport. It's myself and a journalist, Mike Finch, and we try and tackle elements of sport science that are in the news.
No, thanks,
That's if you can
thanks.
get Mike Finch off his bike.
Yeah, that's true. Or yeah, sometimes we plan them on the bike and pull them off in the studio.
Well, thanks for joining us this morning. And as I said, we'll probably get you on again at some point because there's bound to be more discussion of this type of stuff coming up in the near future again. So we'd love to have you back, and I'm sure we can fill many podcasts with this type of stuff. But yeah, thanks for joining us, and yeah, go off to all the stuff you have to do today. And thanks for making the time.
Thanks, Ross.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'd love a full chat at some stage again about other things. Really good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great stuff. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.